Don't forget to play silly underdog picks with us. We make our picks on Thursdays at noon. You get to pick three games. Remember, three underdog teams to win. They have to win their game outright to get the points. We've got weekly prizes. All you have to do is go to thegamenashville.com for more details to play. Silly Underdog Picks presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. We gave Forever Titan Chris Sanders a lot of grief. I was front and center of that line about taking UConn last week. They were getting 30.5, and we we took him out behind the radio woodshed and let him have it on air, and they lost by 2.
They had a 2-point conversion to tie and didn't get it after losing the lead. They had the lead for most of the game.
Yeah, yeah. It would have – I don't know what we would have done. If they would have won that game and it was – first of all, that would have never – that would have been silly underdog history, right? No one's ever won a 30.5 point spread game. I don't know what we
– I think we've had upper 20s, but I don't think we've ever had anything over 30.
You think upper 20s? I know.
Yeah, there was a win. This was in the 1990s. Somebody had I think Rob Fessmeyer had an Ole Miss team against Georgia or something like that. It was like 29.5 or something
really?
Like that.
Really?
That's what sticks out.
I thought
out
Chris
of my mind.
Hit one with Vandy a few
he
years
did.
Ago.
It was
he
in
did,
the 20s.
Against Missouri.
It was in
no,
the
20s. It was 21.
Yeah.
It was 21. Vanderbilt against Missouri. But ironically, I bring that up because Connecticut is the next opponent, and Vanderbilt will be hosting them on Saturday. We bring in Mitch Light from The Athletic. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm good. Darren, hope you're well.
Yeah, everything is good. Let's start with the game that was down in Jerry's world in Dallas. Arkansas and A&M. A lot of people, this was not a great surprise. I think this was kind of like a sexy upset pick, and it played out. Arkansas looks really good. They're a top 10 team. One, just talk about what you see in them right now. And two, how about the coordinators they have on the offense and defensive side of the ball that are looking really, really good right now for Sam Pittman?
Yeah, that is something I was going to go to. And, you know, Sam Pittman, a lot has been made of the hire there and kind of no one saw it coming and obviously how he did a great job last year and all that. And the fact that he did not have experience even as a coordinator, how important it was going to be for him to make good hires, and he definitely did. And again, this is nothing to say, take away from Pittman, because he has those guys believing and all that, but I don't think enough has been made about, you know, Kendall Briles, who's, you know, comes with a little bit of baggage from his time at Baylor with his dad and all that, but he is a, you know, very, very highly respected coordinator. And then Barry Odom, you know, we kind of dismiss him a little bit because his Missouri tenure didn't go great, but he was a great defensive coordinator under Gary Pinkle at Missouri. Great job at Memphis, and you know, going to Arkansas has been great there. And the thing about this staff, they inherited a team that was probably one of the worst Power Five programs at the time as far as losing streak. But it wasn't without talent, and we all know that to be the case. At Arkansas, they don't recruit clearly like the top teams in the league, but they recruit consistently at a top 25 level. So I think it was like a perfect storm of Sam Pittman coming in, his message resonating, hiring a really good staff, taking over a roster that was far more talented than the results on the field, and then they experienced some immediate success. Now, you know, they lost the opener last year to Georgia, but it was clear that they were a different team. So then it's sort of like when you enjoy success right away, players start believing even more, and then more so even this year. And the fact that, you know, KJ Jefferson, I think it's been better. I know they had high hopes for him internally, but I think he's been better than anyone thought he would be at the quarterback position. Hopefully he's healthy after getting banged up, but they were really good. And that was, you know, you can look, A&M has athletes all over the place too. They're not great at the quarterback position right now, but there was nothing fluky about that game. You know, I watched probably 2/3 of it flipping around and stuff, but if they play 10 times, does Arkansas win 8, 7? I don't know, but they were clearly the better team on Saturday.
They'll get a break, though. They'll get the week off, though, after that big win. Oh, wait a minute. No, they've got to go to Athens and take on Georgia. Then they get to go to Oxford and take on Ole Miss.
Then they go to Ole Miss. I mean, Arkansas goes to Ole Miss after that.
Right.
Then Auburn.
Right.
I mean, and then Arkansas, Pine Bluff, Mississippi State, then at LSU, at Alabama. I mean, we always talk about life in the SEC West. it's brutal enough. And then when you, one of your crossover teams is Georgia, which is one of the most talented rosters we've seen in college football in the last 20 years. I don't know if they'll be one of the 20 best teams, but as far as roster talent, they're up there with anybody.
We just had Clark Lee on, and when, at the end of that interview, Chase brought up Notre Dame and their big win. And by the way, shame on us. None of us took Notre Dame in silly underdogs. What were they getting, six and a half?
6.5, yeah.
None of us took Notre Dame, and they cruised to a 41-13 victory over Wisconsin. But you think about Brian Kelly's body of work. I don't know if underrated's the right word, Mitch, but people seem to want to, you know, I don't know. They don't heap a ton of praise towards Brian Kelly. They certainly – I feel like we all doubt Notre Dame a lot, right? Like, oh, they're really not that good. Like, we do a lot of that over the years. But I'll tell you what, since he's been their head coach, there's one thing you can't knock Brian Kelly. His teams are consistent, man. They are consistently good, and they may not win the big ones all the time, and we know their playoff woes. But why do you think that is? And, oh, by the way, they've got another big one this week as they host Cincinnati.
Yeah, well, you're preaching to the choir on Brian Kelly. I've been a fan of his. You know, I remember dating back to his Central Michigan days, and got that program was terrible. He got them good immediately, enjoyed immediate success at Cincinnati, and then has been pretty good at Notre Dame, like you mentioned. A couple things. He, you know, early in his tenure, he was more of a hothead. You know, pictures of him on the sideline with his face about the, you know, veins popping out, red, you know, vessels bursting and all that. So I think people like to poke fun at that. And, you know, it's just Notre Dame. People love him. People love to hate him. And, you know, he did have that. They dipped, went 4-8 one year, kind of reinvented himself, and has been, ever since then, they've been very consistent. And, you know, there's said many times in the last few years, sure, they lost in the playoff badly, but a lot of teams in that position would have lost the teams they played badly. Just because they got blown out by Clemson and Alabama in the playoff doesn't mean they didn't deserve it. You plug any team in there, those teams would have lost those games too, probably. So, yeah, Notre Dame's kind of found its little sweet spot there, and playoff expansion goes to 12 when we think it will in a few years. I expect them to be a consistent playoff team. You know, I don't know how much longer Brian Kelly is going to coach. He's not that young. He's not that old either. But, yeah, I agree with you that I think nationally people kind of, not I don't say dismiss, but just don't maybe appreciate how good of a career he's had.
Yeah. NC State, double-digit underdog at home in Raleigh. They beat Clemson in double overtime. Clemson's 2-2, and they obviously have not looked great. Their offense, it looks just pathetic. It's just weird seeing Clemson like this. Is this just a really, really slow start, and all of a sudden they're going to turn into gangbusters the rest of the way, or is this what Clemson is, and they're like a 7-5 team?
Yeah, I don't know if they're 7-5, but this is what they are. They're just not a good offensive team right now. You know, one thing about them, their offensive line has not been great in recent years. So you take away Travis Etienne and Trevor Lawrence, and the offensive line hasn't gotten any better, and they're not as dynamic at wide receivers as they've been. That explains the offense. You know, Will Shipley's a 5-star freshman running back they brought in from North Carolina. High hopes for him. He broke into the starting lineup, but he might be great down the line, but he's not having, you know, the effect that some people thought he would have. Clearly, he's not Travis Etienne. And this one thing about Clemson's rise is they always had the superstar quarterback, whether, you know, it was Deshaun Watson for a few years, Trevor Lawrence. You just think when they did not have it, the one year it was Kelly Bryant, they were still good. They made the playoff, but their offense wasn't very good. And then this year, you know, so they've recruited well, but they have not recruited quite at the level of Georgia, you know, Ohio State, Alabama. So their overall roster talent isn't as good as those super elite teams that when they're not getting good quarterback play, that they're just going to be, you just plug them in. So, again, I think 7-5 is a little bit of overreaction, but this is not a playoff team, clearly. It's not a good offensive team.
This is going to be a big one in Lexington this Saturday.
The question or the game?
No, just the game. The game. I don't think it's going to be.
I thought the question was going to be a big one. Okay.
Well, no, I just want to get your thoughts on it's going to be an electric atmosphere. Kentucky's hosting Florida. Florida looks better than I think we initially thought. And here's Mark Stoops in Kentucky flying under the radar again. We're so used to, oh, it's Kentucky football. You know, basketball season's just around the corner. Well, they're 4-0, Can they actually pull this upset off, or does Florida get them?
I'll disagree with you on one thing, Darren. I think Kentucky's not really flying under the radar. I think nationally a lot of people, even there's some people out there that picked them maybe to finish second in the East, to battle Florida for second in the East. The one thing, and you're
I picked them well in second.
There you go. You're well aware of this rivalry. For years and years, it just Kentucky would come painfully close and then literally forget to cover wide receivers like for Florida, and Florida would just beat them in the weirdest ways possible. Now, they finally kicked that door down and won. Now, that was in Gainesville. It wasn't a home game. But so not that that should affect this game or this series or ever, but I think the weight of the losing streak against Florida is not on this team, so they can just kind of focus on winning the game. The problem for Kentucky is I think Florida's really good and better than I thought they would be offensively. Emory Jones has been very, very good at quarterback. I think, last week against Tennessee, 200 yards passing, 100 yards rushing. He settled in a little bit there. You know, Anthony Richardson could be back at some point. I don't think they're great at running back, but their offense seems to be humming. But, Kentucky has been good offensively. You know, Will Levis gets a lot of pub. A lot of people talk about him from his banana-eating skills and his big right arm. You know, they did not look great last week. They only scored 16 points at South Carolina. South Carolina's got a good defensive line, but they're not great defensively other than that. They only scored 28 against Chattanooga. So I'm intrigued by this game. It's a great docket on Saturday. I'm not going to say this is the game I'm looking forward to the most, but I think this is, like you said, Darren, a really, really good game. I'm picking Florida just because I think their offense is really good, and I've been a little alarmed by Kentucky's offense the last couple weeks.
Yeah, 33-1 is just doesn't sound as good as 34-0, you know. So yeah, Florida,
no doubt,
won 33 of the last 34 meetings. Yikes.
Yep.
Spans a long time. We're talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic, talking college football as we do every week at this time. So Mitch, I wanted to try to put in perspective, because there's different levels of rebuilding, especially when it comes to Vanderbilt football. You and I have seen a lot of them. And after a game like Saturday, where it was just so tough to watch, I mean, I was there. I went to the game. It unraveled so quick. I don't think I've ever seen a game get that lopsided that quick. And, of course, you're playing one of the best in Georgia. But it got me thinking a little bit of what did Clark Lee inherit? Because I don't know that it's fair to have this be a reflection on what he's doing right now, because I just don't see, even relative to other Vanderbilt teams, the talent level. It's really sketchy right now.
Yeah, there's so much more to, you know, talent is obviously a huge part of the equation, Willie, and coaches, certain coaches, like we talked about Sam Pittman, have the effect where they can come in and they can, you know, get everyone on the same page and everyone's, you know, the message is resonating and all that, and that's great. But when it comes down to it, you got to have some players. And I agree. I look at this roster, and I don't know if there's an NFL player on the roster. Maybe some of the young guys, maybe Davion Davis is the guy I know they're really high on, although, you know, his production hasn't been great. So you look at the roster, and it's just not there. And then, you know, you're going against the Georgia roster. It's kind of a perfect storm in a bad way. One of the that's probably the most talented Georgia team Vanderbilt's ever played, or in the past 20 years. And this is probably the least talented Vanderbilt team. So when things go bad early, they're going to unravel. And, you know, we've talked about this a lot, and I did a little research earlier today. The 2000, because, you know, a lot of Vanderbilt fans rightfully will say, well, look what James Franklin did his first year. They go 6-7, and, you know, took over a team that went 2-9. And that argument, that's a fine argument. I'll ask you, Willie, how many future NFL players do you think were on the first James Franklin team? James Franklin inherited ex-NFL players on that 2011 team.
Well, just off the top of my head, they had Jordan Matthews, they had Zach Stacy, they had Casey Hayward. So yeah, that's the first three that just pop into my head. Three really, really good players. Now, of course, that's only three, but I think there were some others.
Jonathan Goff on that team?
No. Goff was Bobby Johnson.
Oh, he was okay. Not, but there were some offensive linemen. Go ahead and tell us the answer.
Okay. The answer is 10.
10.
And does not include Chris Marv, who was a three-time All-SEC player who just – it was weird. He said maybe he just wasn't a prospect. He didn't even go to, like, the combine. Like, he didn't
Was Earl Bennett on that team or no?
No. So, all credit, because Zach Stacy, running back, three offensive linemen, Ryan Seymour, Wesley Johnson, and Spencer Pulley. And these guys weren't just a cup of coffee in the NFL. They've all played multiple years. Brandon Barden at tight end, Jordan Matthews on defense, four guys in the secondary, Kenny Ladler, Casey Hayward, Andre Howell, and Sean Richardson. All those guys were in their third year of the program or more. So it wasn't like, okay, yeah, that guy's a future NFL player, but he's a freshman who didn't play. So, again, this is just kind of frame of reference. Give James Franklin that we're not – I'm a huge James Franklin fan. He deserves all the credit in the world for turning things around so quickly. But it's just – it's not apples to apples, the roster. You know, Bobby Johnson did a very sneakily good – that's not really a word – but recruiting job later in his tenure. And a lot of that was after breaking through in 2008, going to a bowl game and showing, hey, you can come here and go play in the postseason. Now, most of these guys weren't that highly rated, so give that staff credit for identifying guys. And then, you know, Franklin's staff, and I've talked to Bob Shoup about this in the past, they developed some of those guys too. And, you know, Bob Shoup used to always tell me they just inherited a really good group of guys, really coachable group of guys who bought into what they were doing. So, you know, in this current roster, will one of these guys, multiple guys, make the NFL? Who knows? Some of them, you know, a lot of them, young guys are playing. But I knew sort of the numbers there, but I was even surprised when I looked it up. And then real quick, frame of reference, Bobby Johnson took over in 2002 a roster that had five future NFL players. Jay Cutler, Justin Geisinger, offensive lineman, Javon Hay, Hunter Hillenmeyer, and Rushin Jones.
Yeah, and that first year was really rough for Bobby Johnson. You had a true freshman in Jay Cutler that just sort of
redshirt freshman.
A redshirt freshman, yes. And
yeah,
fortunately
redshirt
for him, for Bobby Johnson, he had a quarterback at least that had some talent there. So it's just interesting to compare the different things, the hand that you're dealt. And with that said, Mitch, a lot of people will say, well, hey, you know, with this transfer rule, can you not make it happen quicker? Can you go get some guys that are not getting playing time at different places and maybe speed up a rebuild? So what's Clark Lea and his philosophy on that front?
Well, that's going to be interesting because he has said he is not they don't intend to hit the transfer portal very hard. I wouldn't say they're not going to do it at all, but he wants the guys to bring in and kind of develop in their system and their culture. But that's in today's game, that's difficult to do. And not saying you don't need to be like Michigan State this year, it's like 14 starters, something like that, who are transfers. And I don't think that's not healthy in the long term for any program. But I actually thought Derek Mason late in his tenure did a good job grabbing some transfers, some grad transfers from Ivy League schools who kind of they plugged in and weren't big time players but were contributors. And he got hurt, but Raymond Davis, the running back who was one of Vanderbilt's best offensive players, was a transfer from Temple who transferred in before the coaching change last year. So that's going to be something interesting to watch if this staff kind of stays true to their belief that they don't want to bring in a lot of transfers, because you're inevitably going to lose some every year. And it's not a Vanderbilt problem. It's a college. It's across the board there. So if you're not bringing a lot in and you might lose a starter or two every year, you know, just kind of do the math there. So that will be something to monitor going forward.
Mitch Light is with us from The Athletic, talking some college football. All right, the game of the week that I am so pumped about, Ole Miss, Alabama, in Tuscaloosa. Lane Kiffin looking to become the first Saban assistant to beat him. It hasn't happened to this point. They had a shootout last year. So on a scale of no chance to I can't believe what I just saw, where would you put Ole Miss's chances of winning this game?
Much closer to, how do you phrase it? I can't believe what I just saw. I think it's going to be a really good game, a really entertaining game. You know, we saw what Florida did running the ball against Alabama. Ole Miss has a good running game. You know, we think of Matt Corral and not just him running, but they've recruited very well at the running back position. This is a legit offense. And, you know, we saw last year they couldn't stop Alabama defensively. They scored, 40-something points on them. Great game. Frustrated Nick Saban, but they were right there, and they're better this year. And this is not an original stat. A friend of mine, Bill Troche, who Willie knows well, just texted me this before, and I hope Bill isn't going to use it on anything because I'm stealing it right now. But the last team to beat Nick Saban in the regular season while throwing at least one interception was 2000 LSU, the 9-6 overtime game. So basically you have to be perfect to beat Alabama in the regular season.
That is quite the stat. Do you think – it's funny because we talked to Vince Ferrara earlier, who covers the Vols in Knoxville that we have every week. He feels like Ole Miss is going to beat Alabama. He said, I think Ole Miss is going to win, is how he worded it. So to hear you say that makes me even wonder even more if this could possibly happen. So is that because you think – you know what Ole Miss's offense is, but are you that – impressed by their defense or see an improvement in their defense that makes you think they can hang?
Improvement. You know, we saw what they did to Louisville in week one, and Louisville ended up scoring 24 points, but a lot of that was late. Tulane's a pretty good offensive team. We saw what they did to Oklahoma, though Oklahoma's, you know, you can debate how good they are, but they're not, obviously they still have Oklahoma talent. So they're clearly improved. Now, that's a team that plugged some guys in the transfer portal. They didn't go crazy there, but they plugged some fits in there that they look for specific fits at different positions, and that's playing out there. So it's a little bit of it's a combination of a little bit of everything, Chase. That I think Ole Miss is really good. I think they're obviously legit on offense, improved on defense. Alabama showing a little bit of vulnerability. Now this might be a Nick Saban game where he just does what Eli Manning did on national TV last night to everybody and just says we're still Alabama, and they're up 28 to 7 in the second quarter. And then we're all wondering why we thought Ole Miss was going to win. But on paper, I'm excited to watch this game.
You're saying Lane is going to do a double barrel?
No, I think Saban's going to do figuratively, not literally.
Oh, well, Eli right. did.
That's going to be what he's going to show the world. Like, we're still Alabama. Nice try, Ole Miss.
I love the way he did it. And then goes, we can do that, right? They can just blur it out. And it's like, yeah, Eli,
it's
you already did
TV.
It.
It's live TV.
There's not a delay.
Oh, that was fantastic. Always appreciate it,
by
Mitch.
By the way, you guys know who, I'm sure that's Eli Manning's old man cave down there. Do you know who his neighbor is?
Who his neighbor is?
Willie could probably guess.
This is in New Jersey, right? Or New York or wherever.
Al Leiter.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Long story short, when my son had a high school baseball game this year against Chris McElwain's brother, Ethan McElwain, at Nolensville, I put something on Facebook like, hey, Gabe's baseball game, he's playing against the Vanderbilt commit. Some friend of mine from high school, a girl's like, oh, my daughter went to elementary school with a Vanderbilt baseball player, Jack Leiter. I was like, well, yeah, I know who Jack Leiter is. So I said, hey, what's that? And she said, the funny thing is he's not even the most famous person on the street. So Eli Manning was across the street.
Yep. Eli's got dibs, I guess, in the big picture. Super Bowls.
Some good stick wiffle ball games on that street.
Man, it's a high level.
Mitch, good stuff as always, man. Have a good rest of your day.
All right, take care, guys. See ya.
Mitch Light from The Athletic. We'll come back and wrap up the show. By the way, there's some stuff out there Adam Schefter put out about Marlon Mack. Spot Rack has also put out some stuff about Marlon Mack, so we'll discuss that. And Philip Forsberg has also talked to the media about his future here. So a lot of things to get to wrap up this Tuesday edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase. But first, speaking of Chase, he's got a word about BetMGM.
I sure do, because let me tell you what to do. I have had some fun using the one-game parlay feature. It has worked well for me. I've missed just a couple of things too, but you can bet on more than the final score during football season with one game parlay at BetMGM. It's an exciting feature designed to help you make selections within a single game from over 400 bet types, including my favorite team and player props. All you have to do is log into your BetMGM account, create your best parlay before the game starts. One game parlay is the fast and easy way to combine your same game win, total, and prop picks. If you're new to BetMGM, sign up today and make your first bet risk-free up to $1,000. All you have to use is the bonus code 1025GAME. You can place one game parlay bets on pro and college football, baseball, soccer, and more. Go ahead and take your favorite player to score, the home team to cover, and the over and touchdowns. Log in today or download the BetMGM app to try one game parlay. New customer offer, paid and free bets. You must be 21 years or older, must be in Tennessee. Visit BetMGM.com for a full list of terms and conditions. For problem gambling support, call the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789.